Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
He was fun. I mean, if I were going to sum him up in one word, it would be fun. He was the light and life of every room he went into because he had a great sense of humor. He was full of joy, always laughing. If you ask anybody, that'll be one of the things that they remember about him is his laugh, because it was just infectious and he was just fun to be around, fun to have in your life. And when we lost him, it was like the light just went out, the joy, the laughter went out of our lives. There's all these connections, all these people, but our list of people we can talk to who knew something, it's getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and that's why time is so important right now. And until we find Jared's remains, we really can't do anything. We can never have peace until he's put to rest, if he can be. Someone doesn't want him found, because if he's found, it opens Pandora's box to all of the other things that were going on. And that's why we need help from the people that listen to your podcast, from the people that still have information, because they know what happened, and them keeping silent is what is keeping Jared hidden, and who knows how many others.
In March of 2017, a man was arrested and charged with capital murder and abuse of a corpse. Nearly 23 years after a 20-year-old man named Jared Green had mysteriously disappeared from Searcy, Arkansas. Only Jared's car was left behind at a store with the doors unlocked, the windows rolled down, and the keys on the floor. Jared's loved ones had been waiting decades for answers and peace to come, after wondering what could have happened to him and who would have wanted to harm Jared. Had the police arrested the right man? Would their prayers finally be answered this time? Or would those answers continue to elude them? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 369 of The Vanished, part one of Jared Green's story, Retribution. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 1994 was the year of The Lion King, which went on to be the highest-grossing animated film of all time. Ace of Base was at the top of the charts with their hit, The Sign. It was also the year that Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman were murdered, and O.J. Simpson took police on that infamous police chase. For the Green family, 1994 was the year that changed the trajectory of their entire lives. David and Sharon Green had three children, two sons and a daughter. Jared was their middle child, a boy full of energy and jokes. By 1994, Jared was 20 years old and finding his way through young adulthood. He had a girlfriend named Shannon. They had been together for a couple of years. Shannon last spoke to Jared on September 30th, 1994. The two had plans to hang out that day, but their plans fell through. Here's Shannon.
The last time that I spoke with him was on Friday, September the 30th of 1994. And I couldn't remember exactly what time it was, but I knew that it was dark, you know, so it had to be after 5:30. But it wasn't so late because I had gone to our local county fair with some friends. I was supposed to go with him that night, and we had gotten into an argument, so I didn't go with him. And I never saw him again, unfortunately. That was the last time that I spoke to him on the phone.
Shannon had no clue that this would be the last time she would ever speak to her boyfriend, but she could tell by his demeanor on the phone that something was wrong, but he wouldn't tell her what it was.
I think because he and I were supposed to go to Little Rock that morning, and I can't remember if I had seen him the day before to make those plans or if we had verbally made those plans. So he was supposed to come by at 10 o'clock on that Friday, and we were going to go to Little Rock to spend the day. And he never called, like he never contacted me at all until that night. And he had gotten to where he would do that fairly often. So that night, my sister and her roommate, they had come over to the apartment where I lived, and they were like, come to the fair with us. And I said, no, they were there when I was on the phone with him. And he was begging me, please. I mean, to the point that he was crying and was so adamant about me going with him. And, I was upset, but he was so upset that I asked him, what is wrong with you? Why are you acting like this? And I told him, I said, I'm going to the fair with Shelly and Heather. I said, I'll just talk to you tomorrow. Just call me in the morning, go do whatever, you're going to do or whatever. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. And my sister grabbed the phone and she hung it up.
It was sometime shortly after this call with Jared that he ultimately disappeared. He was such a special person in Shannon's life, and life simply would never be the same without him.
I met Jared. We went to school together. I met him when he moved here, and I believe it was the eighth grade, and I was a year younger than him. And we were friends, but we didn't start dating until high school, and we had a class together, and we just got closer and closer and closer until he asked me to prom, and we just unofficially, I guess, started dating, and we were inseparable for the next basically 2 to 2.5 years until he went missing. I can't tell you how wonderful he was, and I wasn't just a real flighty person. I was always a one-on-one, long-term relationship, and we got to know each other. We were such good friends, and just he had the best personality. I mean, he was so funny, and just his laugh, like I can still hear his laugh to this day. And it was infectious. And he was the kind of person that would, he could overtake a room, by telling a story and just have everybody laughing. He had an incredible smile, the most beautiful smile and lips. And just, he was amazing. And he was very attentive. He would write me letters that were just so kind, and he would make me homemade cards, and this is a teenage guy, he was just always surprising me. I mean, always just surprises, and not just, he bought me jewelry and gifts and things, but just special small things. He'd be the kind of person that would spread out a blanket and we would just lay and talk. I mean, he was amazing. He was so amazing, and it's just so heartbreaking. I can't really tell all of the good things. There aren't enough words.
Nearly 30 years later, Shannon's pain is still palpable. She has always wondered about all of the what ifs. What if she had gone with him that night? Would he still be here today? Would Shannon have disappeared too? These unanswered questions have made it difficult for Shannon to work through the stages of grief, though she eventually moved on and has a family of her own. These lingering thoughts and questions have never completely left her mind.
I have often thought, what if I had gone with him? Would we have gone to Little Rock, or would he not have gone wherever it was that he went? I don't know. I mean, it's tough. I've had so many people, what they say is, well, thank God you didn't go with him that night. It could have been you too. And I guess it is a way to look at it. But, I think, what if I could have swayed him? What if he was supposed to go wherever it was that he went? And I could have said, no, you can't do that, or you're not going to do that, or I don't know. It's just a conflict, I guess, that just never goes away.
When Shannon spoke to Jared, he was clearly upset and scared about something. It would later come out that Jared had loaned a friend a gun, and on the evening of his disappearance, he asked for the gun back. Jared stated that he needed it for protection from someone. It was clear that Jared felt that his life was in danger, and that danger must have been real, since Jared was never seen or heard from again. Jared had left his parents' house that evening, stating that he was going to meet someone at a local country club. For Jared's parents, David and Sharon, they weren't immediately aware that anything was wrong. Jared was 20 years old, and he still lived at home. But like most young adults, he spent a lot of his time hanging out with friends. But when he didn't come home and they couldn't reach him at any of the usual places, they started to realize that something was wrong and they needed to contact the police. Jared's father passed away several years ago, but we had the opportunity to speak with his mom, Sharon, who explained how this all unfolded for their family.
He didn't come home, and we started looking for him, started calling, you know, around, calling his friends. Just nobody had seen him. And so we waited, because sometimes he would go and stay with his friends for a few days, things like that. But finally, we realized that he had to be missing because we just couldn't locate him anywhere. One of the boys that knew him saw his car in the Walmart parking lot. And so we went to find it and we brought it home. And then such a horrible, horrible realization when you think that your son is just gone and you don't have a clue where he could be and no one else seems to know where he could be. And you keep hoping and praying that he will come back, that he's just left for a while. But after so long a time, you just know that he would never do anything like that. We didn't immediately know what was going on. You know, it was just all not knowing what to think. And it was so scary. But you thought, well, maybe he did just go somewhere and he will give us a call, you know, and tell us what's going on. If he had felt like he had to leave or what. But we never heard from him. We never heard from him again. None of his friends or anybody ever heard from him again either. So I basically knew Jared would never do something like that, not contact us at all. He cared too much about his family.
On October 5th, 1994, David Green reported his son missing to the Searcy Police Department. He told them that he had last seen Jared on September 30th around 8 p.m. Jared left to meet someone but never came home. And later they found his car in the parking lot of a local Walmart supercenter. The doors were unlocked, the windows were rolled down, and the keys were on the floorboard. He also noticed that a gun that Jared usually had under his seat was missing. We also spoke to Jared's sister, who was also named Shannon. And she told us that it was difficult to get the police to take her brother's case seriously at the start.
I think we called initially the Searcy police. I think like he had been gone 2 days and we called because, you know, at the time they were like, well, he has to be gone 24 hours or whatever. And then they were like, well, he's 20. He could be off doing whatever he wants. Maybe he doesn't want to be found. I mean, they absolutely did not care. They were not interested in investigating. They were not interested. They had no urgency around his disappearance at all. Because we're like, well, he's an adult, so, you know, there you go. He just wandered off. And we're like, no, you don't understand. He would never, ever, ever do that. They were not interested. So we called the state police, and they basically gave us the same thing. Basically, everybody told us there's really nothing we can do. And it wasn't until we found his car on, I believe it was October 2nd, somebody told us where his car was, that they had seen his car up at the Searcy Supercenter, that it was parked up there. So my dad and I went to go get it. And when we found it, the car windows were rolled down. The sunroof was open and his keys were thrown up under the front seat. And he had all kinds of junk in the trunk and all this, like all of his personal belongings. The only things that were with him were there's a conflicting story about he had one or two guns. We knew that he had one gun that he had with him, at least, that was not found, not in the car. And like his driver's license, not in the car. So that was it. You know, that was it. So we call again and we had to basically insist that the Searcy police come and fingerprint his car because we were trying to explain to him he did not just throw his keys under here and walk away with no money, you know, nothing at 20 years old. Well, he doesn't have the skills to know how to just walk away and start his life over. Eventually, the cops came out and fingerprinted the car, but they did a very cursory job of it. So we were like, can you at least fingerprint the keys and tell us if he drove his car himself back to Searcy from wherever he had been? They were like, oh, well, we won't be able to pull anything. I mean, it was just, we were so frustrated. And at the time, we didn't understand how corrupt it was. Right now, looking back after all this time and the things we've uncovered, it makes perfect sense to me why the things happened the way they did. But at the time, we were so, you know, you're so distraught. You cannot think straight. You don't know what you should do. You have no idea who to go to for help. You feel utterly powerless. And that's because you are. There was no movement on Jared's case. And it moved around from investigator to investigator. And what we were told was, essentially, anytime they had a new person that they brought in, like the rookie investigator, they'd slide Jared's case over and say, okay, here, go work on this.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Jared's case went cold for many years, leaving his loved ones to try to seek answers on their own. Jared clearly seemed frightened of someone before he mysteriously vanished. But who and why? We will explore the who and why in this case further in part 2. But for now, we need to take a look back at Jared's life so we can gain a better understanding of what was going on in late September of 1994. Jared's mom told us about her son's early life and personality.
He was my oldest son. Then I have a younger son. Shannon was the oldest, and he was the middle child. And then I have a younger son. He was just a joyful, joyful boy. You know, he was always laughing, always very happy, loved everybody, never met a stranger, loved other kids, always happy-go-lucky. He was diagnosed with ADD when he was 11. We knew that there were, you know, there was something wrong because he was extremely smart, but he didn't show it in his schoolwork. And they, you know, diagnosed him with attention deficit disorder. It's almost like he didn't, you know, he never thought anyone was out to hurt him or, you know what I'm saying, when he was younger. Of course, that changed when he got older. But he was just so tenderhearted. He just never met a stranger. And everybody basically liked Jared, as far as, you know, I could tell. He was well beloved by all of his friends and, you know, and his relatives, of course. He was just a joy. an absolute joy. He was a high energy, a very much an extrovert, but he was also, you know, around just normal people, but he could be, you know, he was shy in certain situations, I think, like most children are. He was highly active because of his attention deficit, too. It was just like raising a little monkey around the house, you know. He would just fly off the furniture and make a wreck out of me, but that was just the way he was. He just was full of energy, always laughing and making you laugh because he was always so funny. But he couldn't concentrate like a normal child could, you know, and that's why it was hard for him. So they put him on Ritalin. The problem was with Ritalin, and of course this is, you know, way many years ago now, it would not let him sleep. But his grades, and the only time he was ever on the honor roll was when he was on Ritalin. It would not let him sleep. And, you know, you can't have a 11-year-old boy not able to sleep. So that was a problem. So we just had to take him off of it, and then there was really nothing to do. So we just had to, you know, we just had to live with it. And he had to do the best he could in school. And he did do okay, but it was just always such a shame, you know, that he couldn't have his full potential that you knew he could have.
We also spoke to some of Jared's friends who met him during childhood and their teen years. One of those friends is Greg, who has fond memories of Jared after meeting him in middle school.
I met him, I think, in the 8th or 9th grade. So we graduated in 93. So I guess what would that be, like 89, 90? We played baseball together. Oh, he was just a really funny guy. I mean, he was a lot of fun to be around. Had a great personality. Definitely an extrovert. I mean, yeah. I mean, just he would always make you laugh. I mean, he was kind of like a comedian, I suppose. Definitely outgoing. I mean, he wasn't shy by any means. In high school, we would like to go camping. And just about every other weekend, I would say, we would go out for the weekend. Baseball, we played on the high school baseball team together. So that took up a big part of our time. Always hanging out back then, cruising was a big deal. I don't think they do it anymore, but you know, just get in your car on the weekends and drive around up and down the streets. He was always at my house. Like my parents used to always be like, "Where's your boyfriend at?" If he wasn't over, you know, he was like just a fixture. Either I was at his house or he was at my house.
They developed a core group of friends that became inseparable. One of those friends was Bo.
I moved to Searcy in the 8th grade is whenever I met him. And then we all had our little clique. We hung out together from 8th grade on, graduated high school. And if you've seen one, you've seen the 4 of us, you know, the 5 of us. And just kind of went from there. He was just always outgoing, fun to be around, always joking. You know, kids, we're jokesters. He was just like one of us, you know, us. We were all out just having fun.
Greg explained that it was after high school that trouble started for some members of their friend group, including Jared.
After high school, we went to ASU BB, it's like a junior college, I guess, in BB, Arkansas, for 1 year, so I guess 93 to 94. And I moved to Jonesboro, Arkansas, after that to go to school. And he stayed there and, you know, he disappeared. So the drugs came into play, I guess, really in 93 and 94. It was just so rampant back then. Like everybody did it. Like it may still be that way. I don't know. I haven't been there in a long time, but it was not uncommon. I know from my circle of friends, I don't think there was anybody who hadn't done it. Now they may not be doing it every day or anything like that, but they had tried it. Honestly, I think it was just a bunch of bored kids who didn't have enough sense not to do it. I mean, it was just like, oh, okay, well, they're doing it. Why not? Give it a shot. I mean, that sounds really naive and ignorant, but you got to remember we were like 16, 17, whatever it was. And it was naive and ignorant. But yeah, I would say it was just something everybody was doing. I don't know that there would be there may be an underlying reason, like psychologically or socioeconomics. It was just, I don't know, it was just like there and everybody was doing it. For me, I realized it's just like, where is this going to lead other than jail or the graveyard? Like, this is really dumb. I don't know, maybe it was just a matter of maturing a little bit, but I knew I didn't want to go down that road any further.
Bo remembers this time too. He told us that they were just kids getting into stupid trouble, and that ultimately led Bo to join the military in an attempt to straighten his life out.
And then I graduated high school in 93, so I think there's a graduation picture for senior year. Yeah, we're all standing there in tuxedos and Jared's in the middle of us. We were all just close friends. I mean, that was kind of right when cell phones were coming out, back when you still had pay phones. So we did a lot of stupid stuff, obviously. And one thing led to another. And us four or five knew that we needed to do something, or we were on the road to no good, basically. I think we started getting them about that time, which was stupid. So I joined the military. Buddy Greg, he joined the military. A couple other people moved to Key West, started working down there. And we all just tried to get out of the mess that we were in and move on with our lives. Because we knew if we stayed around, it wasn't going to end well. Because that's one thing with Searcy, there's not a lot to do in that town. So generally, if you're not fishing, hunting, or, you know, doing some type of activities, the kids usually end up doing stuff.
Jared never had the opportunity to make it out of Searcy and turn his life around as his friends have done, because he vanished one night at the age of 20. Jared's mom, Sharon, told us that she was totally shocked when she learned that Jared had been using drugs. She felt completely blindsided by this, but also explained that she didn't know much about drugs and didn't know what warning signs to be looking for.
I was just so shocked about it all that did not have a clue, because I trusted his main friends and, you know, never knew anything. But there again, you know, when they get a certain age, you don't keep tabs on them all the time. He was just terribly naive. You know, he would believe anything somebody would tell him. He never did think about someone lying to him, basically, that sort of thing. You know, that was part of the reason that he was lured into drugs, because he just didn't realize. And he did take drugs. I think partly that was because he was a shy person. And, you know, if you have to get up and have a speech in school or anything like that, that was very hard on him, even though he was a really outgoing little boy when he was just one-on-one with friends and that sort of thing. Because I remember one time he was in a play at school. He was, you know, terribly nervous about it. It was just hard on him, you know. She was just that shy. You know, I never dreamed, honestly, that Jared would ever even think about taking the drug. When they get out amongst peers and other people, I just feel like that Jared was kind of taken advantage of, kind of used in a way, because he was naive. When I found out that Jared was doing the drugs and even carrying the drugs around, and I was just horrified. I just really lost it. We wanted him out of that, and that's when the trouble kind of began, because they didn't want him out of it, the people that were involved with the whole thing and all the dirty goings-on, you know, in that area. I did not ever think about things like that, except for I knew that I wanted my kids to know that they should not mess with drugs or anybody that had anything to do with drugs. So it was a terrible, terrible awakening for me and a shock. And for my husband as well.
Jared was more deeply involved in the drug world than his parents could have ever imagined. When they caught Jared with drugs in his possession, it seemed to set off a chain of events that ended with Jared's disappearance.
I went to get something out of Jared's car, and I pulled where you had to pull the seat back to get in the back part, a little black film cartridge thing, you know, the old timey film. And it popped out of that. It was when you pulled the seat back, there was a little pocket thing there, and it just popped out. And I picked it up and looked at it and opened it. And I knew immediately what it was. It was some kind of drugs. And I freaked out. And, you know, I called my husband and told him, and he came home, and, you know, we talked to Jared about it. And, you know, not knowing, we really, you know, we got him in trouble because that was something he was supposed to take care of, something he was supposed to deliver you know, he just freaked out himself, and we really, truly were in loss as to what to do. He really wouldn't tell us whoever was involved in it. We had no idea, no idea at all who was involved in the drug dealing at all. The only thing I knew was one time a friend of his had come over to the house, one of his better friends that he had known forever, and they started talking about, for some reason, I don't know how it came up, but they started talking about two boys that had all kinds of money and that they were living in a house in North Little Rock or Little Rock, somewhere like that. And I looked at my son and the other boy, and I said, look, Jared, that sounds like drugs to me, but I think you better stay away from those boys. And he just, you know, he just really didn't say anything and just agreed. And all the while, it was exactly the ones that we believe that did him harm. My husband, he didn't freak out as much as I did because he had a totally different personality than me. We were just, you know, I was more high strung and he was just real laid back mostly. But we both were just in shock and just were just overcome with fear that he had gotten involved with people that dealt in drugs. It was just a horrible shock to us. Scary. You know, we really didn't. All we could think to do was, you know, you just have to get out of this. You know, you just have to quit doing this.
Jared was threatened and his family feared for his safety. They went as far as to send Jared to stay with relatives out of state until things cooled off in Searcy and it was safe for him to return.
Well, he was extremely upset that we found out about it or that I had found it. And I think back, oh, gee, I wish I'd never found it, but I did. And that's just the first thing you think of is, well, he's got to stop doing that. He can't do that anymore. You know, he's going to wind up going to prison. He's going to get killed. You know, every bad thing runs through your mind. So we tried really hard to get him out of that. It just, you know, you would have thought that would have been the end of it, but unfortunately not. They threatened him and, you know, just the way they do things. Then when we thought everything was going to be okay, because Jared had left home, he went to my brother's in Houston. He got word from someone, I don't even remember who it was, he talked to someone that lied to him, of course, and that everything was okay and that he could come back. And I'm assuming, I'm not sure, but that they would let him pay back the money. And we would have given him the money, but he told us that they would not let him pay it back. I don't have a clue who called him. He was just plain lied to and then intimidated, and he didn't want to tell us anything. I think because he was afraid that they would kill him if they found out anything. Because, see, we did not know anything about anybody until Jared disappeared.
To Jared's family, they believe that this was a trap set for Jared. They believe he was lured into coming back home and told that everything was okay now. But things weren't okay, and then Jared was gone. Since Jared never had the opportunity to redeem himself and turn things around, a chance to grow up and out of this phase of his life like his friends did, Greg feels like Jared's legacy has become defined by this. But he told us that there was so much more to Jared.
He wasn't all about the drug. The drugs, unfortunately, is why we're here. But he was so much more than that. I mean, he was a great guy. I loved being around him, and it breaks my heart that this is what he's reminded or remembered by. You know, that's not all he was. I mean, that was the last year, I guess, or whatever. But he was a fun guy. He was a good friend. I mean, you never had to worry about him talking bad about you or anything like that. I mean, he's a good athlete. He could make anybody laugh. I mean, if you're having a bad day, he was somebody you would want to be around. I do remember talking to him about how we wanted our kids to be able to grow up around each other, like someday. I mean, he was a smart guy. He could have done whatever he wanted.
Greg remembers a time shortly before Jared disappeared, when he came to visit him and told him about troubles he was having with some guys that he owed money to.
He had come to Jonesboro about, I hate to be wrong on the dates, but probably a week or two before he went missing, maybe longer, a little bit longer, within a reasonable amount of time. And that was the first time I'd saw him in a while. And he was telling me that he wasn't going to pay them for some drugs because they had ripped him off so many times and he was just done with it. And that was the one thing that sticks out in my mind. But he was just done with it all. I wasn't there during that time. So I don't know what the deal was with them ripping him off like he was talking about. I have no idea what that would be. But something went wrong in that relationship, if you want to call it that. He definitely wasn't a thief.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Jared's girlfriend Shannon explained that back then, she was a little on the naive side. She had just graduated high school and didn't fully grasp what was going on with Jared and the danger that he was in. In hindsight, it's all so much clearer.
You know, he was in school for a little while. I think he went to college for a year, or maybe not, maybe a semester or two. So, I mean, he had started college, but then I wasn't, aware at the time, but he was slowly getting more and more involved with the drug activity. So I did not see him use drug. Like, I've seen him smoke pot. Like, he's the one that introduced me. I was 17, I think, when he brought out marijuana, and I didn't even know what it was. I was like, what is that? I was raised in a very sheltered home, so I just didn't know. And it was later in our relationship, but he did not introduce me to the meth. Like, I had no idea that he was using methamphetamine until after I had graduated in 94, which would have been May of 94. So it was sometime, like, he and I were still good in May of 1994. Shannon and I, his sister, we talk about how, I did not realize how thin until later. I look at pictures and I think, gosh, he was super thin, like his face had gotten really thin, and kind of a little bit skeletal. And I didn't realize that at the time. And I guess because I was so close, like I saw him every day. So I didn't realize how much weight he was losing. But he did not show me that he was, he hid it from me until sometime between probably June and closer to the August. Now I see that Jared's face was gaunt. And I do remember telling him over the summer after I graduated high school, I do remember telling him, because we had gone to the lake, so it was warmer. It had to be like June, July. And I remember telling him, you're so skinny. I remember thinking, oh, it went in a downward spiral. It was so fast.
Jared seemed to mostly keep Shannon out of the loop when it came to this other side of his life. We don't know if he was afraid that she would disapprove or if he wanted to protect her from those who were threatening him.
He had actually left and gone out of state. He came back. Like, I can't remember when he left for the couple of weeks. I say a couple of weeks, that's because I've been told I don't remember. I didn't even know where he was at, because one night we were talking on the phone, he and I. And I was like, so where are you? And he said, standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. And, we laughed, but, I didn't know if he was joking or serious, but we just laughed about it, and he was so funny. We had gone through a very rocky part of our relationship. You know, it had gotten to where, you know, like he wouldn't show up. He would say, hey, I'm going to, you know, let's go do this. And then I wouldn't hear from him. I mean, he had changed. His personality had started to change. Because we had gone to prom, you know, in April, and everything was great. And then I graduated in May, and everything was still pretty good. So all of this, it like collapsed in just a few months. I mean, it just absolutely collapsed. I have a lot of suspicions and a lot of things that I pieced together after the fact. But like I did know that he carried a gun toward the end. I saw the gun toward the end. He showed me the rocks. I started understanding, but I still, and I know this sounds crazy, but I still did not understand the gravity of it because I'm just thinking, you know, high school.
Since Shannon was mostly kept in the dark and didn't know that Jared had been threatened, she couldn't understand why he was acting so strange on the phone with her that night. And then Jared just disappeared. That phone call still haunts her nearly 30 years later.
I talked to him Friday night. He never called me Saturday morning. And I'm still not thinking. I'm still not thinking this. And even into the next week, I'm still not thinking that something is wrong. I'm just thinking, okay, well, I called Sharon. And I'm like, hey, Sharon, have you heard from Jared? And she's calling me. Have you heard from Jared? No, none of us have heard from Jared. And I didn't know at the time that he was supposed to go and meet someone. I didn't know what the Green family knew. I just talked to him and he did, you know, he was extremely upset and not himself. But as far as I knew, I was going to go to the fair, come home, go to bed, and I was going to talk to my boyfriend the next day. When I started to realize that something was wrong is when they told me that they found his car at Walmart. I didn't know he was missing until, I mean, I knew he had not called me. It had been several days and he had not called me. We were all calling each other going, where is Jared? But I'm still not thinking, you know, that he's gone for 30 years. Shannon told me that his car was found at Walmart with the windows down and the keys in it. I knew that he did not leave that car there because Jared was very, I mean, I lived in an apartment with my mom and my twin sister, and it might have been 50 yards maybe from where he had to park to my apartment, and he locked it every single time. I don't care. He always locked his car doors. And when they told me that the windows were down and he had left his car, just left it, I knew something was wrong. Like I knew.
Jared's sister Shannon explained that from her perspective, his downward spiral into the drug world happened so quickly. Her family was certain his disappearance was connected to drugs, and they tried to get help from outside agencies early on because they were too concerned about local law enforcement being entangled in the drug trade locally.
Because remember, I was off at school. I wasn't home when all this stuff started happening. If you don't know what drug abuse looks like, if you've never seen it before up close, and you don't know how to handle it when you do see it, you're not really sure what's going on, then you don't know what to do. And my parents were definitely in that position. They didn't know what was going on. And I didn't know because I was in Texas going to grad school. And when I came home, because my mom was like, hey, you know, there's stuff going on with Jared and it's getting bad. We need you to come home. And when I did come home, even then I didn't understand or I didn't see it. And I don't know if it was just because I didn't want to, or I was so naive myself that I didn't know what it was, but he started using in when he was, I think he was about 19, he had to have been 19. And that's something that we're still trying to figure out, like a timeline around when he actually started using, when was he showing signs of use? Because we didn't even know what the symptoms were, to be honest. We had no idea what methamphetamine was. And then the area where we were at in Searcy was just replete with meth, like meth production centers. He wasn't on drugs long enough. You could see the decline. When we look back at family pictures, you could see the decline because meth, I guess, takes hold of him pretty quickly. We could see the decline in him physically and the way in his behavior, but that ramped up. It was a very short period of time where that became kind of at its peak. And so I would just say like 3 months or 6 months maybe where that was happening. We knew that drugs were involved, so we called the DEA. I had a friend of mine that I went to school with. Her husband was in the DEA. So I contacted her and said, hey, what can we do? You know, can we get the DEA looking into this? all with the same answer. And he was he worked for the DEA in California. So, you know, he had no ties to the corruption in Searcy or in White County at the time. So, you know, basically everybody told us there's really nothing we can do. I've had law enforcement people tell me this true. Jared also told us this is true, that essentially the police force at the time when Jared disappeared was part and parcel of the drug trade in that area, that they were actually helping it along. Jared told us that we were living at the Searcy Country Club on the golf course up there. And he told us that, you know, you wouldn't believe it. Like, everybody that lives up here is involved in what's going on. He told us the White County Sheriff was involved at every level, including the judges, including the politicians, almost at every level. Somebody was profiting from that drug trade in Searcy. And I believe, I know it to be the case. I know that's why Jared's case was never solved, because we know who did it. There's no doubt about it. Either they turned a blind eye or they were actively involved in what was going on. And that's why I say Jared's case is that Pandora's box. They do not want it solved. They did not investigate then. The fact that they're investigating now is unpleasant and uncomfortable for them, because, you know, they're still in positions of power in Searcy, some of them. And that could all come tumbling down if you open the Pandora's box and we find Jared's remains.
From the very beginning, Jared's father was sounding the alarm to the police that he knew who harmed Jared and why. There were two men that Jared knew who were known to be drug dealers locally, and Jared had said that he was going to meet with them on the night that he disappeared. He was going to talk to them about this debt that he owed, and he was never seen again. In the investigator's notes from late 1994, it states that they discovered that Jared owed these men a significant amount of money and that they were threatening him. Other witnesses told the police that these men were claiming to be connected to the mafia and that they were heavily armed. It seems so obvious who must be responsible for this, yet no action was taken. For the Green family, Jared's disappearance upended their entire lives. But this was something bigger than just one single missing persons case. From the very beginning, people seemed to know who made Jared disappear and why. He had confided in people that someone was after him for a debt. This is likely why he was so upset when he phoned his girlfriend, and why he wanted to get his gun back from a friend. Jared's case went cold. His family wasn't hearing from law enforcement, and it felt like he was forgotten. Meanwhile, dark stories were continuing to grow and spread throughout the community like a cancer. Not even a year later, someone else who was connected to this case also disappeared, and to this day has never been found. Then another one took his own life and reportedly confessed to playing a role in Jared's murder beforehand. But Jared wasn't forgotten. Years later, some rookie detectives decided to take a fresh look at this cold case, and there was finally some movement. In part two, we're going to dive into this dark underbelly that existed in and around Searcy in the 90s. Jared's loved ones believe that this is something much bigger than a simple case of murder over a little drug debt. This story involves a complicated web of people who seem to have connections within the community that kept them out of trouble, and also connections to a series of missing persons cases and murders. There are secrets buried here that some people would prefer to stay that way forever. But the Greens feel the only way they can ever get peace is to find Jared, and they refuse to give up. If you have any information regarding Jared Green's disappearance, please call the Searcy Police Department at 501-268-3531.
One of the things that I want to make sure that people understand is that this was a very specific case of Jared was lured back home and he was murdered. And then people went out of their way to try to cover it up.
There was people involved in it that they didn't want it to all come to light. So they never did anything. That's what it boils down to. And the funny thing is some of those folks are still around, and they're now in higher positions.
They were just left with going to the police, and hopefully they can find him somehow. We had a lot of people saying this and saying that, and some people said, oh, well, I saw him so-and-so and that sort of thing, that, you know, turned out to just be You know, there were so many dead ends, ever which way we turned, that it was just, how will this ever be solved? Because there just weren't, no one was coming forward, and there was lots of people that knew what was going on. And I just cannot, for the life of me, understand how anyone could just not, you know, come forward if they knew something. We keep hoping and praying, and we will find out something soon, you know, that will maybe bring him home. But, you know, that's all you can do is hope for the best. If those people that know, if they could just, you know, come and walk in my shoes, so you know the terrible part is to not know where your child is. It's just the most horrible thing that can happen to a person, to a family.
That brings us to the end of episode 369. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and review. Follow The Vanished on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts. Or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus on Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app. Please support us by supporting our sponsors. By supporting them, you can help us offer the show for free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey. You can also support the show by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week for part 2 of Jared Green's story. Thanks for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.